Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
My name is Angelo Carasone, better known as Stop Back on Twitter, and primarily I spend my time trying to debunk right-wing lies that permeate our media, and there's, you know, one of the places that we do it is on Bob Carson's show.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013. And you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour. And I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book, Vultures Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. And you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
Welcome to another live edition of Carson's Corner here on Blog Talk Radio and in conjunction with the Commons Project Network.com. My name is Bob Carson, and I'm proud to be back with you after more than a week. My life has just been very, very hectic. I started a new program for school, and I started a new curriculum October 21st, and it's just been nonstop. It's been really offensive in terms of the workload there, and that and my job and trying to do so many different things at once here. I've had a bit of a delay in between shows here, and I apologize because our last show here was absolutely phenomenal. It got many, many downloads. Very, very proud about that, and so we want to keep the momentum going here on Carson's Corner. I'm glad to be back with you here on Blog Talk Radio. If you want to be a part of the program, you can give me a call at 347-326-9749. That is 347-326-9749. And we also have the chat room open for you as well. If you want to chime in there, please do. Any questions, comments, or concerns, you can hit me up on the phone or go in the chat room and post whatever you want. I'll be monitoring it throughout the show, as I always do here on Carson's Corner. You know me. I mean, if you listen to the show, you know that I don't like to talk about what specifically is going on in the corporate media for a variety of different reasons. Number one, I reject the corporate media, okay? I am a subscriber to Noam Chomsky's theory of propaganda, the various filters of propaganda. I think there's a lot of truth in what Mr. Chomsky and other scholars have expressed about our corporate media, and you know, therefore, I completely reject it. I reject how these issues are framed. I reject the structure of the media. I reject the filtering system. You know, we could just go on and on and on. So, you know, when you look at the corporate media, you can't escape the corporate media. It's everywhere you go. I mean, even a guy like myself who doesn't own a television, I have to collide in one form or another with the corporate media. You know, it's just, it's a part of life. It's everywhere you go. It's like, you know, even people that I know that are anti-corporation, they, you know, speak about the evils of corporate America and our current form of capitalism. They, to some extent, have to interact with corporations. It's just the way it is. It's, you can't get around it. So, you know, I don't like to focus on, you know, for example, the healthcare law now, how, oh, you know, we have a lot of glitches with the Obamacare website. People are having difficulty signing up. To me, that doesn't make any difference, because the problem is our for-profit health insurance system. The problem is that we in America only allow the arena of debate to be which mechanism are we going to hand the private insurance companies? Which way are we going to mandate that individuals buy private for-profit health insurance? And that's the problem in itself. So what difference does it make if I focus on the, you know, the scenery, you know, oh, this is happening, that's happening, that's just the corporate media. So I don't like to do it. I like to discuss issues that I think are important that you're not going to hear in the corporate media, and if so, maybe just a few mentions here and there. And one of which is food stamps, and this is very, very important, you know, because we talked about this on this program before. A couple months ago, there was this effort led by Democrats in the House. I believe 25 or 27 Democrats tried to live off of food stamps, and none of them were able to do it, okay, because food stamps, it's not a lot of money. You know, contrary to what you hear in the corporate media, we do not spend a lot of money on food stamps, and those receiving food stamps are receiving at most $133 a month. And you can't possibly live off of $133 a month, and that's for a family. And, you know, it's not a glamorous life. But nonetheless, we as a society deem it acceptable to cut food stamps. Now the sequestration cuts are affecting food stamps, also affecting unemployment benefits. And you're going to have 47 million Americans who receive food stamps. By the way, over half, I believe, are working. You know, all food stamp recipients are not sitting home and just waiting for their food stamp checks, as you would be made to believe by watching the corporate media. Many of them are working, and many of these food stamp recipients are elderly individuals, and many are, you know, parents, maybe single parent households that receive these food stamps. And so the Congress has cut food stamps. The House Republicans have requested that $40 billion be cut from food stamps. The Senate wants it $5 or $6 billion. But the point is that we have to cut food stamps here. Even the so-called progressives, even the so-called Democrats agree that we have to cut food stamps. So the only question is, once you settle on the arena of debate, the only question is how much are we going to cut from food stamps? In other words, you know, food stamps are out of control. We have a problem with government spending. And so therefore, we have to cut it. We can't look at other areas of federal spending. And this is what really bothers me, is that our food stamp budget, what we have now, and yes, there are more people on food stamps now than there were, you know, in prior to 2008, because of the economy, because we have a very high unemployment rate. Even though it's at 7.2, the real unemployment rate is much higher, and in many states, the unemployment rate is much higher than the national average. And then you can look at cities like Detroit and other urban areas throughout the country, and you'll see a staggering unemployment rate. All right, and so the idea that food stamps are a major problem and food stamps are what's causing the economy to stagnate. It's just these lazy people, and you know, we're not taking enough responsibility, and America has just a welfare state. This idea comes from the corporate elites that have decided that we're going to cut food stamps. We're going to cut, you know, welfare benefits. We're going to, quote, scale back on the so-called welfare state that really doesn't exist in America. But this is a decision that has been made by the elites, and now the only question is how much are we going to cut? You know, that's the question, not the fact that we shouldn't be cutting at all, not the fact that food stamps have not contributed to the Wall Street collapse of 2008. All of this is ruled out, and we're just deciding how much we're going to cut to essentially punish poor people in America. And this goes to the Noam Chomsky model I was talking about before, where the major media companies benefit from other forms of government spending. You know, if you look at companies like Westinghouse and General Electric, they own respectively CBS, Westinghouse owns CBS, and General Electric owns NBC. And these corporations benefit tremendously from tax expenditures. They benefit tremendously from defense spending and other forms of corporate welfare that are built to the system by these very corporations. And so we're not seeing a discussion about government spending. We're only seeing a discussion about spending that goes to people that we deem are irresponsible or fill in the blank. And, you know, I got to tell you, it's really, really disgusting. It really is, because a lot of people buy this nonsense. A lot of people buy the idea that I'm working so somebody else doesn't have to, right? We see this narrative pushed on Fox News, and we see this within the Tea Party that, oh, you know, I have to subsidize someone that's on welfare, and, you know, we need to punish these people, make them more responsible, and all has to be under the guise of, oh, tough love, right? But it's absolutely nonsense, because if you look at every dollar that we spend on corporate welfare, it's 100 times more than what we're spending on to help poor people. I mean, it's just an absolute reality. Look at the amount of money that we spend bailing out Wall Street in 2008. Some estimates have it as high as $13 trillion. The amount of cost that Wall Street caused, the damage, the devastation as a result of their greed and reckless behavior cannot even be measured. I mean, Peter Joseph yesterday posted a little clip from one of his Zeitgeist films about structural violence, how if you look at all the wars in history, if you look at all the acts of terrorism, right, it's nothing compared to structural violence that's within the system, that is built in the system. You know, for example, our Wall Street speculation, our Wall Street economy, Wall Street-based economy, it's killed more people than any terrorist attack. Deregulation, derivatives, speculation, that leads to unsaid amounts of death, carnage, and destruction. And yet, we don't focus on this. We only focus on, you know, punishing those individuals that do not have the ability to make political contributions. And I got to tell you, it really is frustrating to see people buy into this notion. You hear stories about people on welfare, about how, oh, this person tried to cheat the system, or that person tried to cheat the system. And it's all designed to get you to believe that there's somehow rampant fraud within the welfare system, even though, you know, the Department of Agriculture has looked into this. Various nonprofit organizations have looked into this, and they've discovered that there's very little fraud in food stamps. In fact, we probably monitor food stamps recipients more so than business owners or, you know, Wall Street executives or, you know, fill in the blank. There's almost no fraud in food stamp in food stamps. But yet the corporate media has an agenda. They want to highlight these programs to make you believe that the problem with America is that we're just not working hard enough. The problem is we're just too lazy. We have too big of a welfare state in America. And as long as you buy that out there, as long as people, you know, tune into Fox News and right-wing talk radio and infect others in their lives, then we can continue with this level of income inequality. With this mindset, no level of income inequality and wealth consolidation is unacceptable. It's the result of the free market. It's the result of people just working hard and enjoying the fruits of their labor, whereas other people are just lazy, the takers, the leeches, as we hear from libertarians out there. And, you know, that is what this is all about here, is that we never hear about how food stamps are an economic stimulant. Now, you would never hear that in the corporate media, but in actuality, it's true, because a food stamp recipient, when they receive that food stamp check or however they receive it, I've never received food stamps before, they spend it right in the economy. Okay, so food stamps are a greater economic stimulant than our current, you know, corporate welfare system, which includes, you know, tax expenditures, loopholes, tax cuts that go primarily to the wealthy. And as Dr. Robert Reich has said, and just about any nonpartisan, any objective economist will tell you, that when you give a tax cut to a wealthy person or you give a tax cut to a corporation, that money almost certainly is not coming back into the economy, because that wealthy person or that corporation already has more than enough purchasing power. People don't start businesses in America because they get a tax cut. It's never been like that. It doesn't happen. People start businesses in America primarily to make a profit, but in order to sustain that profit, there has to be demand in the economy. And that is what is so important about, you know, food stamps and other forms of economic stimulus, is that if you, you know, enact these measures, if you continue food stamps, maybe even increase food stamps, if you give an economic stimulus to individuals like myself, the working poor, middle class, and poor, such as maybe a tax cut or a wage increase, or whatever it is, you will see an economic stimulus in our economy, because you and I spend everything that we make. In fact, we spend everything that we make, and we still don't have enough money to cover our expenses, so we go the credit route. You know, we get the credit cards, or we do what we have to do to pay our bills. And that's why you and I are the economic drivers of our economy. You and I have more purchasing proportionally than any wealthy person. So the more that you and I make, the better the economy does. And we've seen this really all throughout history, but most recently we saw this with the payroll tax cut that was instituted in 2010, I believe it was. President Obama cut the payroll tax to 4.2%. Okay, pretty much payroll taxes in America are only paid by poor people, individuals that make under $113,000. Okay, if someone makes $1 million, they only pay payroll taxes up until $113,000. The rest of their income is not taxed for payroll taxes. Okay, it's part of the reason, you know, it's one of the the frustrating things is that we have so much income that's not being taxed for Social Security and Medicare and others, because we as a society have made the calculation that rich people are not going to need Medicare. Rich people are not going to need Social Security or unemployment, so therefore they shouldn't have to pay into the system, where you and I have to pay every single dollar that we make. A certain percentage goes to payroll, goes to Medicare, Social Security, and unemployment insurance. And so when Obama instituted this, right around the time that he extended the Bush tax cuts, we saw an economic stimulus. We had more money in our paycheck, and as a result, we went out and we spent that money. But then at the beginning of this year, the payroll tax cut expired, and retailers all across America took a hit because people were spending less money because they had less money. And that is just basically an example of how we stimulate the economy, and you could throw food stamps in the mix. So now we've cut food stamps. We're going to decide how much more we're going to cut, because this is the wishes of the elites, the corporate elites of America. It's not a question of cutting food stamps. It's not a question of looking elsewhere in the budget. It's not a question of having a real analysis of the assumptions that we use. It's a question of how much we're going to cut. And this is going to hurt the economy. It is, because that's less money that individuals are going to have. And when you cut things, when you cut programs designed to fight poverty, you increase poverty. It's pure and simple. Clinton, you remember during the 1990s, Bill Clinton had this program, voluntarism, right, where he pushed this idea of, we're just going to volunteer to help everybody. Bill Clinton was a very, very conservative president. He really changed the face, unfortunately, of the Democratic Party. Or maybe you can argue that Ronald Reagan did in the 1980s with his tax cut and his evisceration of labor and so on and so forth. But, you know, Bill Clinton had this program, voluntarism, and that coincided with the reforming of the welfare system. And Noam Chomsky talks about this a lot, how, you know, at that point, the consensus within the media was that everybody agrees that our welfare system needs to be reformed. So the only question is how we're going to do it. This is the, you know, arena of debate. This is the allowable question that is in our corporate media. And so what happened? Bill Clinton teamed up with Newt Gingrich to reform welfare at a time where, okay, maybe the economy was doing better in terms of unemployment. But now, as a result of that, you've got two-thirds of people that are in poverty that can't get any type of government assistance, okay? So, you know, many people, it's very, very difficult. And the threshold is really unbelievable, because an individual like myself who make too much to qualify for any government assistance but make too little to really survive on my own, I'm caught in the middle. You know, I'm in no man's land. And I got to tell you, I'm probably closer to the national average income than someone that's on food stamps and whatnot. And so, you know, this is where we're at right now. It's a real sign on how we are not changing. We are continuing to move in the same direction, and something has to give. Enough is enough. And you look at the current state. We're going to talk about the Tea Party. I just got a great book by Paul Street and Anthony DiMaggio called Crashing the Tea Party. Very, very important stuff I want to go over in this book. But you've got a Republican Party now that is moving towards fascism, in my opinion. Certainly got fascist elements within the Republican Party. And you have the Democratic Party that is essentially what the moderate Republican Party used to be. And so, you know, or what the Republican Party used to be. And so all of this does not spell good for you and I. All of this means that we're not changing the fundamentals of our economy. The corporate media is entrenched. There is an alternative media out there, but obviously, you know, we're swimming upstream. It's very, very difficult for us to reach the masses of people that need to be educated on these issues. And so we're just continuing downstream. We're continuing to be a very, very sadistic country in many areas. All right. Now I want to switch to the Tea Party here because I think this is a very, very important book that I got. I've been buying books on Amazon.com, and it's good because you can basically get any book that you want. You pay a small shipping and handling fee, and you get the books delivered right to your house. And some people say that Amazon is putting pressure on, you know, brick and mortar stores like Barnes and Noble, and Borders went out of business, and so maybe some of that had to do with Amazon.com. Amazon doesn't have a good reputation for treating its employees well, but then again, very few companies do, because in America it's all about the bottom line, and workers and wages are treated as, you know, costs to businesses. It's treated as almost a hindrance to business. And this is another contradiction that is pointed out in Noam Chomsky's theory of propaganda, how we're all wage earners in America. Okay, the vast majority of Americans are wage earners. In fact, only 1% of the population owns, you know, any stock or a significant amount of stock. I believe 1% of the population owns 50% of all stocks. And if you go down the income ladder, 10% of the population probably owns 70 or 80% of the stock. So the bottom line is the stock market is irrelevant. You know, corporate profits are irrelevant to our way of life. And yet when you pick up a newspaper or you turn on a television, it's nothing but, you know, business this, business that, even though our interests are not reflected by examining businesses. But in any event, what was I going to say? You had the Tea Party. And there hasn't been really scholarly analysis when examining the Tea Party. Okay, we hear in the corporate media some analysis when it comes to, you know, racist things being said or, you know, racist signs at Tea Party rallies, but no real deeper analysis when it comes to the fundamental racism within the Tea Party. And this is important because the Tea Party, as reflected by polls, is fundamentally racist. Now, I'll give you many examples, and Paul Street discusses this in his book. If you poll the American people and ask them, do you have a favorable opinion about black people, you'll probably say, you know, you'll probably see maybe 30 to 40% of Americans that believe that black people are not hardworking and that too much of the problems, or too much has been made of the problems facing black people. But yet if you poll the Tea Party and ask them about minorities, you will see that an overwhelming majority have negative opinions about black people. You know, for example, there was one poll that's listed in this book, I believe it was an ABC Washington Post poll, that found that over 50% of Tea Party members believed that, I think it was 57%, believe that too much has been made of the problems that face black people. And probably that same majority believes that black people in America have just as much of a chance to succeed as white people. And then you can go down the line, issue after issue. You can ask the Tea Party if they believe that President Obama was born in the United States. And you'll see 50 to 70% of Tea Party people do not believe President Obama was born in the United States. You can look at something like, and this wasn't mentioned in the book, but it's part of a study that's out there. You can look at Google searches in certain parts of the country, and where there are racist Google searches, you'll find a high presence of Tea Party supporters. And it goes on and on and on. The evidence is actually overwhelming when it comes to racism within the Tea Party. And yet the corporate media, you know, they excoriate a guy like Alan Grayson for comparing the Tea Party to the KKK. Oh, how can he make such a comparison? Oh, my God, what are you talking about? Oh, you know, these are individuals that are just concerned with government spending, and, you know, they're good faith and good-natured people. But the polls, you know, say otherwise. And I've been talking about this for a long time on this program, how, you know, we have a real march towards fascism in this country. And what's fueling the fire is groups like the Tea Party and the radicalization of the Republican Party, to the point now where, you know, even after the government shutdown and the near defaulting on our debt, they're going still in the same direction, because the very forces that fund the Republican Party, you know, the corporate think tank, the Heritage Foundation, other right-wing groups, the Club for Growth, fascist organization, I would argue, other, you know, entrenched billionaires, special interests, they viewed the mere opening, the continuance of government as some sort of a failure, and they vowed to many of these groups, to primary individuals that allowed the government to continue to operate. And this is really a majority of the Republican Party now, where you have entrenched forces that about elections, because either way, you know, they're going to win. If they lose the 2014 midterm elections, well, guess what? They primary more Republicans, and they bring the Republican Party more and more in line with fascism. And what happens is, when the Republican Party becomes more and more in line with fascism, that means the Democratic Party goes more and more and more to the opposite direction, to the point where, as I said earlier, the Democrats are now conceding that we have to cut food stamps. We have to cut Social Security. And so either way, these forces win. But what's fueling this, in part, is racism, is the Tea Party itself and individuals, and they do exist, and I would submit to you that they represent a majority of white America, where, you know, they believe that, you know, welfare is just going to black people, and black people and minorities are dragging down the economy, and Mexicans are people's jobs, and it's this real nativist, you know, point of view that enables, you know, special interests to basically get their agenda approved. And it's using, you know, a lot of uncertainty out there. Let's be honest, the economy is still very uncertain. You've got changing demographics in America. You've got individuals like Tea Party leaders, you know, Mark Williams or Judson Phillips, or fill in the blank, saying, I want my country back. We need to take back America. And you have a real paranoia that has been chronicled really since 2008. And it's only getting worse. These people are only getting more and more extreme. And it's becoming a dangerous environment still to this day. The amount of militia activity out there is mind-boggling. You've got the so-called sovereign citizen movement, which really, I think, is connected to the Tea Party. Many sovereign citizen movement members are Tea Party members and vice versa, swelling to over 500,000. You've got various different right-wing libertarian militia groups out there. You've got the Department of Homeland Security report going back to 2009 warning about acts of right-wing terrorism. You've got the anti-abortion movement, which has really grown more and more radical to the point that someone like Cheryl Sullinger, who I believe spent time in prison for attempting to assassinate an abortion doctor, is now a moderate member of the anti-abortion movement. And she has a lot of clout within that movement. And, The Nation wrote an article last month about how this lady can basically help to get abortion doctors, their licenses pulled because, this is just how upside down our system is. And it all fits into just how paranoid and extreme a majority of white America has gotten. And it boils down to fear. But this is something that, again, you're not going to get a real analysis on this issue from the corporate media because obviously there's a conflict of interest there. Okay. Groups like the Heritage Foundation, other right-wing think tanks, they provide guests to speak on these shows. They provide funding, advertising, just fill in the blank. They're connected to the corporate media. They are part of the corporate media. And so the corporate media has to legitimize these people. They have to legitimize, quote, their concern. And that exists in the sense that the corporate media basically gives them a pass. The corporate media will not really have a full analysis of the Tea Party because they have to legitimize them. Now, when it came to the Occupy movement, forget about it. The Occupy movement was destroyed. There's just, you won't find an Occupy member on the media now. Certainly the Occupy movement never had any of the power that the Tea Party has. Anytime you see a Tea Party rally, you'll see wall-to-wall press coverage, no matter how many of these people show up. You just don't see that on the Occupy side because the Occupy movement is not funded by billionaires. There's no money behind the Occupy movement. But the Tea Party has an endless amount of resources and care about winning elections. And so, you're just not going to get a real analysis of the Tea Party out there from the corporate media. And make no mistake about it, folks, as I've said on this program, the special forces, the special interests, they win. They win no matter what happens. If a law is passed and they don't like it, well, look what's happening with the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, I believe it's called. This agency that is supposed to help regulate derivatives. I was just reading an article about this, was browsing through it, and how this Wall Street watchdog organization does not have the funding to watch Wall Street. You know, Gary Gensler, I believe, is the head of this agency. He's having a difficult time enforcing and writing rules and regulating Wall Street, even though supposedly he strongly believes in what this agency does. It's not being funded. So here we have an agency. I don't know the history of this agency, but I'm assuming it was passed maybe after the Great Depression. I don't know. I have to look. But we have a government agency that is designed to look at Wall Street and designed to regulate Wall Street, which, again, Wall Street doesn't like. Wall Street doesn't want any regulation. Okay, the very wealthy do not want any type of oversight. You know, if it was up to them, they'd be allowed to police themselves. And still, this agency is ineffective because of funding, because funding has been cut. You can look at the Consumer Protection Agency, which is a part of the Dodd-Frank bill. This agency, even though it got appointed a chairman, I believe it was Richard Cordray, even though they're in the process of writing rules and trying to, you know, regulate credit card companies and regulate Wall Street, it's ineffective because of funding. You know, so the point here is that even when a law or an agency is created that goes against the special interests still win because there's so many different fronts to the battle. And it's really depressing. It really is because, you know, I keep on going back to Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader has talked about how the countervailing institutions are being weakened. They're being nullified by corporations and special interests they're supposed to be regulating. And when that happens, it's bad for you and I. When we don't have any protection from corporate America and the very wealthy, it's bad. You and I suffer as a result. And, it's really depressing when you look at it. It really is. But I recommend you going and getting this book, The Crashing the Tea Party, Mass Media and the Campaign to Remake American Politics, because, you know, this is almost a rebranding of the Republican Party. It is. But make no mistake about it. You know, even though the corporate media has sought to legitimize the Tea Party, they are essentially the handmaidens of corporate America, and they've been around this long because the elites essentially agree with their core philosophy, which is, you know, low taxes or no taxes. If the Tea Party had its way, there would be no taxes, which is bad because taxes are the core of our democracy. Taxes allow us to live in a free society. If they had their way, we would eliminate government agencies. Government agencies like, you know, the Department of Education, the, you know, Transportation Administration, fill in the blank. We would eliminate these agencies and privatize them, create a massive amount of inefficiency and wealth consolidation at the top. They would eliminate unions. Okay, this is another fundamental of the Tea Party and the libertarian philosophy, where unions are, they are, you know, the act of unionization is an act of coercion. It's using force to extract wealth or extract concessions or whatever from the productive member of society and giving it to those that are not the leeches. Okay. It views capital as being paramount and labor as being a commodity. I could just go on and on and on. These core principles are in line with what the elites believe in America. Okay, so that's why the Tea Party is around. They're not going anywhere. They're going to, you know, completely take over the Republican Party. They haven't already, but, you know, the remaining 10 or 15% of the Republican Party that is so-called moderate, that's going to be completely engulfed by the Tea Party. And then, you know, it's going to move the discussion to unimaginable places. But I'm telling you, I'm warning you on this show, this is what's happening. You know, pretty soon in America, you're going to have a push to repeal the minimum wage. We already have Tea Party individuals. If you talk to these individuals, if you poll them, you will find that a majority of these individuals believe in repealing the minimum wage. A majority of Americans or a majority of Tea Party people believe in getting rid of the National Labor Relations Board. This is not hyperbole on my part. This is a fact. This is what these people have been indoctrinated to believe. And, it's really scary, but, this is where we're going here. And I don't see a viable alternative. I don't see anybody out there that is pushing back. You know, I have a few ideas. I mean, I think a lot of people out there do. We need to reject the current system in many of its forms. We need to reject the Democratic Party, because a Democratic Party is, again, no friend of the working folk. The idea of, you know, keeping the government open, the idea of, you know, not losing a particular battle is the same as winning when it comes to how many Democrats believe, and it's just absolute nonsense. We need to reject it to, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, I just, you know, how do you change the system? How do you really enact change out there? I don't know. But what I do know is that we need to start challenging some assumptions here. You know, we need to rearrange the way we think and stop supporting those that continue to stick a knife in our back. And that specifically refers to President Obama. It really does. All right, we're going to take a brief time out. We'll be right back here on Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson, and you're listening to Carson's Corner here on Blog Talk Radio. And we're also part of the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. Make sure to check out the Commons Project Network, where you have great, independent, progressive media out there. Very, very important stuff. We'll be right back after this brief timeout.
This is Stan Bush. I sing Fight to Survive in the movie Bloodsport. You're listening to Justin Ray Harvey.
Questions we have as we grow, it's hard to find answers to what we don't know, but sometimes there's someone to whom we can turn to teach us life lessons, help us to learn just what's important and what matters most, much more than our teacher, and we call them coach. right there to guide us when we need a hand. They reach deep inside us and help us to stand. To lead by example in words and in deeds, and show us the courage we need to succeed. And I stand before you, and I'm proud to boast, I'm one of the many who's learned from the coast. To never surrender your hopes or your wisdom, courage, and kindness is how you measure a soul. The road that you travel, the choices you make, the load that you carry, the chances you take. Our blessings and offer this toast to one who will always be known as the coach, to one who will always be known as the coach.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour, and I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
All right, we're back here on Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. 347-326-9749 is the number, and we also have the chat room open for you as well. I'm sorry, I'm a little distracted here at the moment, but just some more on the Tea Party here before we kind of wrap up the show, because again, I think it's important that we look at the Tea Party for what it is, and we don't shy away from, you know, calling a spade. And I think it was 2009 or 2010, at the first National Tea Party Convention, you had Tom Tancredo. Remember this? The former Colorado Republican House member. I think he may have ran for governor in Colorado. And, you know, he spoke at a Tea Party rally. And he spoke about bringing back literacy tests, right? And you know, at that time, you had people like Sarah Palin and other Tea Party leaders speaking at this rally, and the whole place cheered. You know, people that know the history of the Civil Rights Movement know that literacy tests and certain other measures were designed to prevent African Americans from voting, and this is part of the you know, Jim Crow South and everything. And, you know, it got a warm reception at the Tea Party rally. And it's just really, really scary to think that this is going on in America. But this is what these people believe in. This is what these people are. And, you know, as tough as I am on President Obama, and I stopped supporting President Obama in 2010, we can't ignore the fact that much of the opposition towards him, the level of opposition, is attributable to the racism, innate racism within the Tea Party. And, you know, I remember examining this. I remember, you know, when President Obama first took office, you had white parents all across America talking about how they didn't want President Obama to speak to their child on the first day of school. You remember that? There was this big uproar. I mean, you know, President Obama wasn't saying anything political, but the idea of a black man speaking to children on the first day of school wasn't acceptable to, you know, the white mothers that watch Fox News and so on and so forth. And then, you know, you could just go down the line, the questioning of President Obama's birthplace, which really has, there's no merit to this. This is just clearly based on his last name, you know, his first name as being different, as, you know, not being American. And even to this day, you look at Tea Party rallies, you will see this racism rear its ugly head where there's a suggestion that President Obama is a Muslim. Or, you know, you had Ted Cruz's father recently. What a nut job this guy is. It's really, really scary. This guy says Obama should go back to Kenya. And then, you know, you look at the signs at the Tea Party rallies, just the disgusting racist signs. And, you know, we could just go down the line here of racial attacks that have been leveled at President Obama that he has nothing to do with that. That is just the Tea Party basically revealing its true character. That's these people revealing just who they are. And this is paramount with Fox News viewers. I mean, this is who these people are, I'm telling you. They're racist. They, you know, believe all the things I was discussing earlier, that black people are weighing down our system, that it's, you know, their inability to work that's driving the economy down, and that they are, you know, too much has been made of the problems of black America, and, you know, we could just go on and on and on. In fact, Glenn Beck, on his radio show, he said this repeatedly, that we're in a new civil rights era, only whites are persecuted. And this is the mindset, this is the mentality of the Tea Party. And it's important for us, again, to really acknowledge that, because you're not going to get this type of analysis on the corporate media. You're just not. You're going to get, you know, some sort of a justification or an equivalency, right? And it's unfair. And it's unfortunate, but that's the way it is. And that's why you got to tune in and support shows like Carson's Corner. You got to support me, Bob Carson, and support the website, the Commons Project Network. Once again, that's the commonsprojectnetwork.com. You could friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. Also, make sure to follow me here on Blog Talk Radio at blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. And I don't post that much on Twitter, but if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. Thank you very much for listening to me here tonight, today on Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. I'll be back at you sometime next week. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.